All right, I'm officially Vanilla Ice at Creative First Mortgage. I like it. All right.
Buddy, you gave me like the longest intro lead I've ever had. It was great, though.
I will
though,
tell right? you, there's longer out there, that's for sure. But I modeled it after good people. I had Bob Berg on one of my episodes, and he's the co-author of The Go-Giver. And
okay, cool.
His intro was about twice as long as what you read there. So.
It's all good, man. I mean, you're actually a really super busy dude. I want to thank you for taking the time to hop on here with me. And yeah, like you've got so much going on. How are you handling all of that?
It comes and goes. Yeah. Sometimes it's really good. And sometimes it's like this, where we try three times to get on and finally make it happen on the third one. So
I wasn't going to call you out on that, dude.
No, good. I'll call myself out on it. It's all good. No, it's the way life works. You know, you got a lot going on, and that's coming from a town of 500 people. That's what I really like to do at this point. It's like, you know, I've established that as the life goals of let's expand, right? Yeah. So keeping it as expansive as possible.
And it is the mentality of busy people get stuff done. And I like that. Like all of you put out a tremendous amount of content, which we're going to dive into that in just a second. But, you're always out there, you're always positive, you're always doing stuff. Do you want to dive into that a little bit? Like what's your tech stack look like, and, how are you producing so much valuable and amazing content so quickly and keeping it out there? Because yeah, you're like a super busy dude.
Yeah, and that's the cool thing with, you know, when you do a lot of things and you just record those things as you do them, and you're able to, you know, kind of utilize your life as the content. And that's really, the way that I was taught to create content was that everything is content. And Gary Vaynerchuk talks about that all the time, right? And you know, just being able to model your life as the content. As far as tech stack goes, I mean, we could talk about that for days, and I know that you've been you've been on with me a couple of times, but a lot of it models around creating long form content and then utilizing that to turn it into short form content. And yeah, you know, the it's the easiest way to do it, right? Like at this point.
Oh, totally is, because like even with this, we're probably going to chat for an hour, but there's going to be 20 or 30 awesome little snippets of conversation in here that we can reuse as content going forward. And I love that. I love that idea of make your long form, cut it down, do your shorts off of that, take your long form, strip out the video. Now you got an audio podcast. I love that multi-purpose content coming from long form. The one that geeks me out is that like you're in your car and you've got your phone and you're just like, boom. Did you find that took you a while to get good at that?
It was forced progress, really. I was working with some editor, like I've done the entire range of what you could think of with a content creator. I've done most of it, right? Of being the one man show, hiring somebody to do it, having the unlimited company that does it all, and you submit it and it takes 24 to 48 hours and you get one snippet back. Like I've done it all. I've done the AI piece, the 25 to 30. I've done pretty much everything you could think of. And recently actually hired a company where, you know, you're talking about me kind of having a lot of content, and we're probably, you know, to use a Grant Cardone statement, 10xing what the content that you see. So, you know, you'll start to see between 3,000 and 5,000 pieces of content from me every month across a couple platforms. So taking it [S2] Wow. [S1] To the next level there of really just like, that's, you know, it's been what I've been trying to accomplish for a long time. And now I'm just like, all right, here's the company. I can do that. I can offload it all. But with the long form stuff, really, it's like, you know, with that company, they're going to create 3,000 pieces of content for me based off of an hour of recording. So a week, like every, so I'll go in and they do an interview a week. To go back to where I started with that, it's basically the same thing. I created my own interviews. So I would go to, you know, when Answer the Public started becoming popular, I would go to Answer the Public and pull 10 questions off of there and just go through one by one and answer them. And I would record them, you know, a minute to a minute and a half answers. And then I would take it into CapCut and I would splice it out and put the captions over it and put it out. And then I'd have 10 pieces of content from one 15 minute session of recording. The biggest thing for me that I remember looking back at that of why that was so forced was I had to find a way to only have to make the decision to do it one time. And that was the biggest hurdle, was like, I want to create a ton of content, but I can't record whenever I, you know, like, oh, I got a great thought. I can't necessarily always pull up the camera and record it. So being able to, you know, put together a list and then just sit down and record it all, that was the game changer. And just that was the flip of being able to produce that much content.
And see, I've seen both sides of it where people are like, you know, they'll take their little snippets, their prompts, put them into a teleprompter app so they can pull up their phone when they're in an elevator or something, and, you know, create content that way. And I think this really does come down to what works best for you, your schedule, your personality type. For me, I tried to eliminate as many barriers as possible between setup and execution. But I do like that idea of sit down one session, let's knock through this. And it's the batch record schedule distribution thing. And this is a topic that comes up a lot. And I like to get the differing perspectives on it to be able to recommend to other people, because it's not easy to create this level of content and deploy it. So you have, I love that you're using a method that works for you, because you are a busy guy. Like, you can put that, you can slot that in on your calendar and say Thursday between 1 and 2:30, I'm going in the studio and I'm going to knock this stuff out. And then, you know, if you can do something on your phone while you're on the run, is so much the better. But I think a lot of people are, you know, well, I don't have time on my schedule for that. I think it's like going to the gym or something. You have to say, this is what I'm committed to doing because I know the results are going to come. So this is what I'm going to do. And just kind of like take no excuses on that one. And I love it, dude. Like, your stuff is just prolific. And you've got so much inspiring content. You've already mentioned Gary Vaynerchuk and a handful of other ones. You got to read a lot too, don't you?
Yeah, unfortunately, not as much as I have in the past. As I get busier, that's kind of the one thing that may take the back seat. But all in all,
you got that little baby crying for attention, man. Definitely, that does not make it easy.
We're having a lot of fun. He just popped his first teeth last night, so we're having all the fun milestones right now with him.
Yeah, it's good.
Is a good content guy too. It's fun to
totally
just record him, and he's content. So he's going to totally be a star too.
It's great, man. And like, it's great. Like, that first year and a half is just every day is a miracle. And then they start walking and they start talking, and you spend the rest of their existence going, please sit down and be quiet. No, it's wonderful, man. And I'm so happy for you. Like, like, you've got it. It's coming. It's all come to fruition. You got the wife, the kid. And so I know in the intro there, we talked about you've got a second home in Puerto Rico. I definitely want to know more about that. But like, I keep seeing the stuff about the power outages in Puerto Rico. I know the power there was kind of sporadic anyway. But like, is that freaking you out at all? Or are you like, whatever, it's just power, we're fine?
Yeah, we ended up doing solar down there because we knew that was a problem. Like, we'd gone through a couple issues, and when we rented out, we've had issues before where the power goes out. And, you know, when you have renters in there and power's out, that's a revenue loss, right? They're gonna move out. So we did the flip to solar, and this most recent one, we actually made it all the way through. We didn't have a renter in there during that time frame. But we did end up making it all the way through without losing power at all. It switched over to the solar and it was fine. But power and water are a big thing down there that can come and go. And so we did a cistern on the roof and we did solar. So we kind of tried to take care of, you know, at least a little bit of both of those issues to maintain the quality of life when that stuff happens.
And do you think that gives you a better perspective on your approach to, like, your problem solving day to day living here? That, you know, hey, I've got running water, and the when I flip the light switch, the light goes on. Life is not that bad right now, you know.
Yeah, we've done quite a bit of traveling. We just went to St. Martin, which was our 14th country that Carrie and I have been to together. So. You know, we've done a lot of exploring and seeing, you know, the luxury side of it, obviously, where you go to the all inclusive. And then we also try to stay, in Airbnbs and stuff like that when we travel as well. So we've kind of invested in the culture and kind of dove into that stuff. So, you know, there's been a lot of perspective of coming back from some of those places and going, man, this is like, it's, our problems aren't that bad, right? Like, it's not so bad here. That's for sure.
And I love that you use the correct word of being a traveler rather than a tourist. And it's a distinction that I figured out years ago. I like to travel to go and soak in what's going on here locally rather than, you know, I'm only going to stay at the 5-star resort and then I'll complain when the food isn't what I want. You know, come on. Look, if you want to stay home and see the sights of the world, hop on your computer and look at pictures. You go there to experience what it's about, and you got to do that almost without reservation or judgment. And then, you know, you change from that experience. I think it wasn't it Mark Twain that said travel is fatal to prejudice and narrow-mindedness? I love that stuff, man. But no, it's and that was Rick Steves always used to end on that quote. And it's just like I love that you guys get out and do that, and I love that you haven't changed that. Because a lot of people, it's like, oh, hey, we got a baby on the way. Okay, now I got to get serious and put on the shirt and tie and, you know, go work at a boring corporate job. And you're not. You're out here slaying it, man. I love it. So,
ultimately, we started the company, Creative First, where we're at now as the ownership. And we started that. Technically, I started it like a month and 18 days before he was born. We were kind of playing around with the idea, and then I was just like, well, let's wait it out. And then I knew that if I didn't do it at that time, I'd be talking to you right now from a different perspective, right? Like the company wouldn't be here right now because of what was coming. So I just said, screw it, and jumped in and kind of went all in on that. And, you know, we're talking about traveling. You know, that's really how we ended up in Puerto Rico to get to buy the house down there was, just jumping in. Like it was during COVID where we couldn't go anywhere. So we had two other trips canceled. We were supposed to go to Thailand, and then we were supposed to go to Bermuda and Peru. We had rescheduled that, and ended up, you know, Puerto Rico allowed us to go down there, and so we ended up there and dove in and went as a traveler and left as somebody that wanted to tour a house. And we got a virtual tour the next day, and we were under contract 7 days later, and just kind of how it worked. Now, obviously, the process down there, not quite as smooth as they go up here. And as a mortgage lender, I'm sitting here kind of screaming to myself, like, you know, how it works. But, it ended up being like 90-day process. And that was like, if like they were just like normal about it. Like they have their title setup is very much different than the U.S. or the mainland, I guess, because they are part of the U.S. But
their territory. Yes. Yeah. There's good benefits. Really cool, like,
how we ended up there, how we could, you know, utilize it. And we saw the opportunity there. And that first year was
huge,
crazy.
Huge.
Everybody was getting their stimulus money. We had the first 6 months, we didn't have an open weekend that we rented.
Wow.
So like every single dollar we put into it came right back out of it. And we were like, now what? Like we thought we were going to be you get it all back and you're like, okay, I guess we'll go find a new one. And we bought another one at the end of the year, in St. Petersburg as well. So now we have, you know, got a house and two houses in St. Pete as well.
Are you doing that grand plan of we visited this location, we like it enough, we're going to buy a rental there that'll qualify as a short-term rental, and then, you know, when we've got say 26 of these things, then all we do is just travel and spend 2 weeks at each one, you know? Just
it sounds like a great plan, right? Like if it was that easy, or, you know, that straightforward. Yeah. You know, the difficulty there obviously becomes the investment on the front end of, like, you know, we buying that many properties, you either have to have a really high income to qualify for a loan, or you've got to have, you know, enough assets to put down up front, right? So, with the new loans that are coming out, it gets easier to qualify where you don't have to use your personal income as much anymore, which is fantastic. We did buy that one as a second home and use it as, you know, because we stay there pretty often, two or three times a year. We'll go down there for a couple weeks at a time, you know, the newer loan programs that you would buy an investment property with, it's pretty easy to qualify for them as long as the rent is there. Nice. And so that's if we were to, you know, add on at any point, which, you know, I would say that we're probably approaching that point within the next couple of years, we would do it with one of those loans, most likely, where we don't have to, you know, dish out our tax returns and all of the go through all the hoops and stuff like that. We just say it's going to qualify.
It's so exhausting. And you're talking about a DSCR loan, right? Debt service coverage ratio. See, I'm not just a pretty face.
The next step is now, what does debt service coverage ratio mean? Because people throw those terms around.
No, that's the next. I get it. I know just enough to be dangerous and say, hey, call Ryan. It gets details. But for me, it's people, there's this, I'm still fighting this battle. You need 20% down. No. And I know you're a little bit younger than me, but I remember original Star Wars. I was just a wee tyke, but I remember original Star Wars back before it was A New Hope. I remember it being a big thing, like, you know, the toys and the early 80s. It was all Star Wars stuff. I remember when Empire came out, Return of the Jedi, all of that. And FHA, the switch from 20% to 5% down was in 1976, just before the original Star Wars came out. That's the same year that Saturday Night Fever came out. And people are still clinging to this myth. I'm like, dude, we're almost 50 years past when this cutoff was. And they're still like, well, I don't have 20% down. You don't need 20% down. You haven't needed that since...
This may not be all that. I mean, it's a controversial take. I'll say it like flat out. Like it's something that not everyone has the courage to say, right? The problem with this, like the reason that people still believe that is because Dave Ramsey has been pushed in the direction of so many people that he is looked at as the direction. And like Susie Orman, same thing. Like all of these people that recommend like pay off all of your debt all at once and like do that all like. It's great for the large majority of people. That being said, the stability that comes with homeownership should not be put on hold over $15,000, $20,000, whatever it ends up being. Like, it takes a long time to save that amount of money.
I always love it because there's either everybody is in either one of two camps. Either you got the Dave Ramsey people or you've got the Robert Kiyosaki people.
And I'm both, actually. So getting rid of the bad debt, right? Like the debt that doesn't help you, get rid of that. But using leverage in the right situations can lead to extraordinary gains in a lot of different ways.
And the thing I love with the more Kiyosaki mindset is it doesn't say don't pay off your debts. It says do it strategically and understand what you're doing. And there are times that that makes a lot of sense to do. And there's other times that maybe that you want to be leveraged on something. And I use this as a very rough round example, but with a VA loan, when you buy a house and you've got $0 into the deal, if the market crashes and your $500,000 purchase is now worth $30,000, that's the bank's problem. You're not out $500,000 or, you know, $470,000. The bank is. And, you know, who holds the risk? And, you know, if it's your own personal residence, you know, I refer to them as the I'm a die houses. I'm a die in this house. Look, you're going to be there for 30 years. Yeah, pay it off. You don't have to deal with the interest. There's a lot of great advantages to that if you're in a position to be able to do that. But at the end of the day, if you're renting and you're like, well, I don't feel like, you know, I can't buy it in cash. And that's what Dave Ramsey said I need to do. Okay, so what, you're going to keep putting your money over into a landlord's pocket for the next 30 years? I actually had that. I went to a showing and I wanted to cry meeting this woman. She was a tenant at the property, which was fine. And she had been there for 31, almost 32 years. And I was like, you realize you could have paid off this property in that amount of time. And, you know, that's part of the reason I love to do this kind of stuff. Please get this information out there because I want people to understand you can get sucked into that. Well, maybe I'll think about it next year. I'm not in a good position this year. And you wind up paying off somebody else's mortgage and you don't have a reset button. You can't go back 32 years and say, well, okay, now I'm ready to buy a house. You burned that time. So the big conversation that I like to have with people, because we get a lot of people relocating, yes, if you're not super familiar with the area, I wholeheartedly encourage you to rent for the first 6 months. Go out, see what's out there, see what you like. Maybe you're a small town person, you want to be over in Safety Harbor. Maybe you like the big city, so you know, maybe downtown St. Pete's your jam. I don't know, and I'm not going to pass any judgment on it. Whatever you want, that's fine. But go find what works for you. Use that 6 months strategically to have a forward operating base. Go find what your jam is. Then buy. I don't care what your scenario is. You need to buy a place, because after that, you're just burning money. And I don't want that for people. You know, the more money I get you over the next 5 years, the more likely you are going to call me in 3 or 4 years and go, dude, I'm sitting on a nest egg. Well, I want to buy a bigger house. Cool.
You know? Or they call me and they go, hey, I've got these student loans that I want to refinance and put into the, you know, and we did that with our house. I've refinanced my house twice. We've owned it since 2017. And the first time was to get a lower rate and factor in the student loans, because it just made sense. Like, I was making this much of a payment with the student loans plus the housing. And then when I put them together, it went to this much of a payment. And so it just, like, I think we ended up saving like $200 a month over that time frame. And, you know, it's within the equity of the house that earned for us. Like, we didn't have to put it out. So, and then the second time we refinanced into a 15 year, and now my house, like, my interest is basically free because we, you know, being in the industry, I ended up getting a sub 2% rate. And, you know, like, we talk about moving, and I'm like, it just doesn't make any sense at this point. And it's not necessarily to lock me into the rate. It's more so like, one, we don't need to move yet. And two, like, yeah, I'm not afraid to move, but what I'll do is, you know, I'll take out a HELOC that gives me access to the money before we move, so that I have the ability to utilize that money as leverage. And when we move, then we'll put a renter in there that pays both. And this is how you build generational wealth, because you have a tax haven for your money. I basically get to, you know, with the HELOC, at that point, I'll probably have, you know, access to, you know, 50% of the equity of the house at that point. And we'll be able to utilize that for the down payment on the new one. So I'll be out $0 out of our savings or out of cash and utilize it, you know, maybe flip the other half into another rental or a large investment that we want to make, or pay off a car or something, you know, utilizing.
And you can do this for you. Yeah, you can do this for you. But I think this is why I do this. Is you can also help other people do this too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, hey, this is what my scenario is. I too have the golden handcuffs. I think my mortgage is 3%, something like that. I'm not moving, you know? But if I wanted to, I need, like, this is one of the problems I see consistently, again, with the 20% down fallacy. You know, well, either I've got to sell this place to buy the next one, or there are so many more tools out there. And that's why I like to connect people with people like you, because you know the tools, you're using them to your own advantage, and you can help them do the same thing, right?
Yeah, these strategies aren't something that's exclusive to, you know, my situation. I've helped quite a few people jump on exactly what I just talked about. Buy the primary residence 4 years ago, 5 years ago. Obviously, we saw what, you know, that time frame did to homes in the Tampa Bay area, where we had back-to-back years of 20% appreciation. You know, so if a $100,000 house would have been worth $140,000 after 2 years of ownership, which is insane. And being able to utilize that, you know, and the median household in Tampa Bay area was right around $400,000. So a $400,000 house that you bought in 2020, in 2022, it was selling for 560,000. So you have considerable amount of room there and access to money, and being able to utilize, you know, not everybody wants to be a landlord. I get it. Right. I'm a landlord for a long-term renter, and I don't talk to the long-term renter. I pay somebody 8% of what we make to talk to the renter for me. So, right. You know, it's
right. It's not the right solution
to make it work, you know?
Exactly. And that's, I like to be able to give people options. And, as I've stolen from a completely different industry, the whole idea of informed consent, here are your options. You have this entire smorgasbord. You probably shouldn't eat the chicken wings. Go have some salad. You know, like, there's nothing wrong with saying, here are your options. Let's see how to make this work for you. And that's part of my problem with, and I'm sure you're up against this too, because every lender I talk to has the same thing, you know, people going, well, what Rocket Mortgage said, like, it's a robot, dude. Like, they're not going to be looking out for you, trying to put you in a better position in your life. That's what we do because that's how we get repeat business, you know?
And that's what Creative First Mortgage was really created around, was getting access to more programs. So, you know, both my business partner, Jason, and I, he's in Alabama. Both of us were being somewhat restricted by where we were before. His was more technology. Like, he couldn't serve his customers with speed of technology. And that's obviously, as we talked about, a little bit of my expertise. I couldn't access the programs that I wanted to. Like, I couldn't get, you know, it was somewhat made to be a little bit of a problem to sign up with new lenders when I would go find a program and get all the details and be like, yep, this one works. And then by the time we got around, and it's just busyness, right? Like, they had other things they were focusing on. Fine. I just wanted to focus on that. So now we've got this array of lenders that we work with. I mean, honestly, we have a program, you talk about 20% down. We have a program that in the right scenario with 20% down, we don't have to see a pay stub and you can buy a house that you move into. And the rate isn't what it is, but if it's a scenario where, you know, let's say you've been in trucking industry your whole life as a W-2 employee, your employer just said, well, we're switching it over to 1099. Sorry. Now you're a self-employed person in the eyes of a mortgage. Now we have to wait at least a year to prove that you have the same income. With this program, we could do it day one of you being 1099. And we move in, you know, and then you stay in this loan for 12 months. It's not for a long-term situation. It's to get you into the house you want to get into. And then we refinance you into the program you belong into. There's just so much access out there to other things that people don't recognize are available. And that's what we literally built the company around, was like, let's make sure that we can get the knowledge of these programs out there so that people that are being told no, they probably should have been told not yet.
Right.
Or and not, I think, with this program.
And I think that's a big reason that we all tend to gravitate towards each other. Those of us who think, okay, yes, I have seen this thing come up more than once. How do I find the fix for that and then make it available to other people who are having the exact same problem? Because these are not uncommon scenarios. Relocations, you know, oh, you're getting a new job. Well, then, you know, don't bother me for another year. And I'm like, same industry, same company, like everything. It's just you're shifting. That should not bar you from getting a mortgage. And everybody I've talked to is like, no, that, like, very rarely are these things actually a problem. The problem is getting the information out to the consumer and letting them know it's not that bad.
It's arguably the problem isn't necessarily getting the information to the consumer. It's
having access to the product.
Another controversial statement, because
go ahead. We like that,
right? The loan officer is the problem. And sometimes I'll go even one step farther. It's the company that the loan officer is at. It's because, and I'm telling this from experience, as a retail bank or in a retail location where, you know, the big box lenders, right? I'm not going to name any names, but you know all the big banks, right? Those companies will sell strategically against brokerage or being a broker. They say, yeah, you've got access to those programs, but nobody uses them. Or nobody ever fits in that box. And for years I was, you know, and again, I was sold this so that I could sell against a broker. But in that model, you're just told to sell what you have, right? Like, it's walking into a Ford dealership and asking them if they have a Chevy. They're going to tell you no every time because they want to sell you the Ford. So getting access to, you know, working with a mortgage broker, it's going to give you the opportunity to understand that those are out there. And that's me putting on responsibility on other mortgage brokers, is you have to go explore and make sure that when you say no, it means that it's not available. Because
right,
we do this terribly, and I know real estate agents do it too, because I've seen it, right? We make decisions for people thinking we're operating in their best mindset, instead of giving them the opportunity to choose.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It happens all the time.
It's loan officers going, here's your rate. Instead of, yeah. I've got this rate at no points. I've got this rate at one discount point. I've got this rate at two discount points. Which one do you want?
Yeah. And here's how that's going to impact your payment.
Here's your rate.
And yeah, and this is what's going to impact your payment, your time frame. You know, it's I think that's why the onboarding conversations with people are so important, and everybody skips that stuff. Where it's just, and I'll call them out on it too. The big banks say yes or no. That's why, yeah, I always recommend mortgage brokers, mortgage loan originators, anybody in that tier who can go shop those loans, because our job is to find, oh, this is what's going on with you. Here's a couple of really great options you may not be aware of. And another big one that I'm going to call them out about. I had a scenario about a month ago now. Big name bank. Got their name on the side of a local stadium here. They pre-approved my client. Cool. All right, cool. And mind you, I'm not a finance guy. I know enough to be dangerous, but I don't really want to know much more than that, you know? But here, I've got a solid pre-approval from a solid big bank. And we went in, got him a unicorn property. Absolutely unicorn scenario. The listing agent was awesome. The house was awesome. Like, everything was awesome. And I got freshly minted pre-approval on Thursday. And Friday afternoon, 4:45, lender called up my client and said, sorry, can't do that. Okay, there went my deal. And I had to wait until Tuesday, because it was a holiday weekend, to get the straight answer that no, he doesn't qualify for that. And I'm like, why? Why did you write him a pre-approval the day I'm making the offer saying he did? It's not my problem. I'm like, yes, now it's my problem.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's amazing to me how they'll push that off, and there's no actual,
there's no consequence
or interaction, right?
Yeah.
There's no ability to say, I need to actually make sure this happens because it's important to me. And it becomes just a paycheck. And that guy's probably getting paid a salary where he gets maybe $25, $50 a loan at that close, and it just doesn't matter.
And they're just cranking out the organ grinder. And well, you know, out of those deals, maybe 30% will actually fly, and that's good enough for me. And they just keep cranking the little organ grinder. Like, really, you know, and this is a big part of the reason that I love to connect with great mortgage brokers and other lenders in the scenario, because I know if I say, go talk to Ryan and you tell me, here's the pre-approval, you're getting it across the goal line. And, you know, or you're going to be falling all over yourself going, wait, there's a better way to fix this. Great. But I know you can do it and it's going to be solid and I don't have to worry about that. And I jokingly refer to this. I expect those fumbled deals. I expect that from Uncle Joe's Beef Jerky Emporium and Home Loans. I didn't expect it from a super big name bank.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that the tough part with those is if you're working with a mortgage broker, you know, like myself, that, you know, we've already talked about, we've explored all these programs. We get you into the niche of the niche, right? Just because you got to buy a house this week and it's just got to happen. The one thing that I will say about that is, you know, and this goes for real estate agents, because we get written off so much, right? As a mortgage broker that does the deals that are outside of the box, we're going to make more deals work for you than the other guy, but we might have that one that like fit the box and then they went and bought something and then it changed.
Right. Why did you buy the car?
You had this much space to fit into and now you're outside that space. It happens. You know, we try to spin it into something else. That's where we fall back to those programs. Like, do you have the ability to get your hands on 20% down? Because if you really want this house, if this is the one, let's look at that. You've got a high enough credit score to qualify for this other program. Now we flip you into that second or third best program that is like the deal saver, right? That's what we kind of call those deals. It's not something we're pitching up front, but it's something that you can have access to if you needed it.
Well, and we obviously, on my side of the world, I don't like having those Hail Mary situations, you know, just lob the ball down the field. Not that I'm a big sports guy, but I use a lot of the analogies. You know, I don't like having to lob the ball down the field and just praying that something good happens. But I know it's the mortgage brokers, mortgage loan originators. You guys are the ones that can, that actually have the capability to grab it out of the air and make something happen. Where some of the other ones I've dealt with, they're just like, nah, we're not going to do that. Like, okay, but you know, this is a client we've been working with for 3 months and you're just not going to try. And that's very frustrating.
Most of the time it's probably because they don't have the ability to, like,
they don't.
And like I said, like their bank is just saying, nope, like we don't do anything outside of this. We have this box and that's it. There's nothing that goes outside.
Here we go.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Right? Is that not like every big bank out there? that's all you're going to get.
Right there. Yeah. I'm sorry, Dave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, Dave. It just isn't going to happen.
But well, no, to me, like looking at deals, and you know, we could go on for days about different scenarios and stuff like that.
Oh, totally.
The one thing that it can make a difference, right? Like it's crazy to me that people will say no. Like you said, they say yes or no. I will give the person, you know, that they fit in that little box, but I'll give them the exact things that have to happen to make that work. Right.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is just getting an extra $3,000 to $4,000 from the seller so you can buy your interest rate down far enough to qualify. Like it can be that little of an amount on a $400,000 house. You get one extra discount point and now your rate is a half a point less and you qualify and we can make it work.
Or if you can bump your credit score up 5 points over the next 2 months.
Yeah, another one that happens all the time. Yeah, yeah. Like pay down, you know, so funny story. One of the craziest things that I've ever had happen. And, you know, cause I work sometimes too hard on these deals, but you know, we had a deal come in and the person had a, I don't know, 680 or 698, I think. And they had paid off all their credit cards and it reported on their credit and it dropped their score under 700 because it didn't show that they were using any credit. I did a scenario, like we have access to some tools that allow us to kind of play around with numbers and balances on credit cards just to see what would happen or what could happen afterwards. And the solution to get their score up 3 points was to put $5 on a credit card, to spend $5.
Really?
So I got to tell this person,
go buy a pair of socks.
Go up to Subway, buy a $5 footlong, and it will bump up your score 5 points. And now you have a 700 and your rate drops quarter point. Like sometimes it doesn't make any sense. But
and what did that quarter point amount to in like payment difference there?
I mean, roughly on a $200,000 loan, you're looking at like $32 a month.
There you go.
On a quarter
point. $5 foot long made you an extra $30 a month for the next 30 years.
Yep. So now you can go buy six $5 foot longs every month for the rest of the 30 years that you have this mortgage. So,
right. Yeah. Like it's those kind of crazy things that I love that you went with the name Creative, because that's what this all comes down to, right? Like this is finding those solutions that people don't even know that this could be a problem. And we're like that, the ability to figure out the problem isn't really the problem. It's this thing and that'll do that thing. And then you'll be where you want to be. Again, that whole yes or no scenario, I've never liked that as an answer. And I love that you just full on pivoted into, let me see if I can fix this stuff. Oh, wait, I got the meme for that.
If there was a problem, yo, I'll solve it. Check out the hook while my DJ revolves it.
Right there. All right, I'm officially Vanilla Ice at Creative First Mortgage. I like it.
There you go. That needs to be your new email address.
That's great. Yeah, it just turns into a scenario that sometimes it like I said, it's all it takes. Sometimes it's spending $5, and it's just crazy.
You wouldn't think always, that.
And the craziest thing would have been the guy that you talked about that says yes or no would have said, no, we can't make that score situation happen because you've already paid off all your credit cards. He doesn't have knowledge around or the tools, you know, and I put it on the mortgage broker or the mortgage loan originator, or, you know, we got 80 titles, but, you know, I put it on that, the person that's in my position, I put it to fall to them only because it's their responsibility of where they work. What umbrella they operate under. It's very, at this point, it's super easy to flip your license. We could do it in 24 to 48 hours to get into a scenario where you can originate different loans and help other people. And for 8 years of my career, I was under the assumption that that's what I was doing, because that's like, I was sold the sales pitch for 8 years of, Well, brokers are worse because they don't have the support. They can't contact, like they can't get the lenders to work for them. You don't have the processing, all of these different things that were sold to me. I've had them sold to me for 8 years. So that's what I sold to the client. It's like 72% or 73% of loans right now are still being originated on the retail side of the industry. And arguably there's about $9,000 worth of savings per loan that could have possibly been had they used a mortgage broker and using the correct lender.
Well, and that's another really good point that I have to tell my clients too. Just because you're going with big name bank, don't think that they're going to actually save you money. You know, yeah, yes, your services cost money, obviously, but you're going to save them so much that they're not going to care.
And you say that our services cost money. In some scenarios, the bank won't allow us to do, you know, to be paid by the bank or the lender. In some of those scenarios. So then we negotiate with the client of, okay, our fee is 2%, 2.75%, whatever it ends up being, right? Most cases, if they're looking at two loan estimates right next to each other,
they're not going to see a difference. Yeah.
Because we've negotiated our pay with the lender. So it's the same scenario as the retail shop that they're up against or the big bank. That big bank is just incorporating their cost into their price. And so it looks exactly the same. You would not be able to tell the difference until closing, where then you get to see what we actually get paid. Because we're transparent about it, we show it and we say, this is what the lender's paying me. That's what the cost was. But it's not, you know, a direct cost to you. And I'm telling you, we don't have corporate overhead. So we don't have like this extra piece that's also baked into a rate before it even gets to me. So like,
you're not
directly to the lender.
And you're not doing the cell phone program charges of, you know, yeah, we're going to charge you all of this, and then there's going to be a fee, and then there's going to be a fee because we charge you a fee, and then there's convenience fee. You're not doing that. You're like, here, this is what it is. And, you know, especially when even on the cut and dry deals, you're probably saving them a few bucks. But even especially when you get into the more creative stuff, the fact that you can pull it off at all, you're worth your money just based off of that. You know, here's a house I couldn't have bought without Ryan. Okay, cool, dude. Charge me whatever you need to, as long as I can cover it. To get into my dream house,
I did a $2.7 million refinance, cash out refinance. No income documents, no asset documents, because she was getting enough money that it covered the reserves or the money left over needed that they wanted to see. So we literally went in and we needed two appraisals because it was a big price point, right? And didn't have to supply any income documentation or anything. If like, again, the rate wasn't what the rates were, you know, what you would normally see on, you know, your lending tree or whatever. But it's a scenario that she didn't have the income to show because she's self-employed and her CPA is very creative. And so that's what we did. And she was able to get $1.7 million out of the house. She was able to build an elevator because her parents were getting older, and so they needed an elevator to get from the bottom floor to the top floor. She was able to build an elevator and completely customize the house so their wheelchairs could fit through everything. And now, like, she got to take care of her aging parents for, you know, a few years after we did the loan. So it's, you know, it's all about how bad you want the scenario to work. Do you need the scenario to work? And I'll advise, like, sometimes it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, we're looking at it going, you know, you're paying this much in rent. You weren't able to save the difference, right? Like, you're paying $2,000 in rent. You're going up to a $3,500 a month mortgage. Where's the difference coming from? And we have to talk through it. But the guy at the big box is going, I'm closing a loan. We're plowing through this. We're never going to have that conversation. Right.
And then that's how we wind up with these blown out deals where, yeah, sure, they're good. They're good. And no, they're not. Why didn't you figure
that? The client gets in and goes, we didn't talk about the mortgage being this high. I can't pay for that. And, you know, just because they qualify for it doesn't mean they should buy it. And
exactly.
You know, we have conversations on the other side too of like, hey, if you're worried about a payment, bring me the house first. Like, show me the address you want to buy. We'll run the numbers and you can decide. Maybe you shouldn't be priced in that $450,000. Maybe you should be at $350,000 and we'll go find a house there.
Well, and that's a big point on my side, and I see this a lot. You know, hey, you've got a pre-approval for $500,000. Cool. tell you what, I'm going to send you all the properties that meet your criteria, probably up to, say, $550. Cast that wider net, because, you know, price drops happen, and I want you to see it early. But if you're telling me you only want to shop at homes that are $350 to $400, cool. I'm just going to put that at, like, $425, so, you know, you're not caught off guard. But other than that, like, it doesn't bother me that you're not shopping at the top of your budget. Matter of fact, I'm really happy about that, because then I don't have to stress over, oh, are your numbers going to work when it comes time to get the loan through the qualification process? And that's huge on my side, because then I know, like, you've got $100 in your pocket and you want to go out and eat a $20 meal. Cool. I'm not worried about you paying your bill. It's, you know, when you got $100 in your pocket and you're shopping for a $99 deal, things can get real sketchy real quick. And I don't like that.
It ends up being a lot of times where they weren't educated on how taxes work or insurance. Now, I mean, obviously insurance is a hot button in Florida.
Yeah.
But you know, they weren't educated on how that works. And so that's part of our process up front for most of the time is, you know, if you're shopping near the top end of your range that you qualify for, bring me the house. And I want you to, like, we're going to say, I'll give you the pre-approval if you really want to make the offer before you understand the numbers. But I would love for you to go talk to this insurance guy and get a quote. And oh, it's also in a flood zone. Yep. Okay, so now you've added another $200 or $100 a month.
And it's small things
start to add up.
And it's small things that people don't even realize. You know, if it's flood zone X and the house next door is flood zone AE, X, you're probably going to be paying a little less on insurance for. You know, your taxes are probably going to be slightly lower. Have you checked the tax estimator? Like, all of these things are factors that go into it. And most of the, like, and I understand these are not presented well. You know, hey, look, it's a great house for $500,000. Yeah, but that doesn't factor in these other questions. And I try to be very good about telling people up front, look, you need to get a solid insurance estimate on these places, and, you know, figure out what your taxes are going to be, because that affects your affordability in the long run. It's not just the mortgage, you know. And then you roll in, if it's in a managed association like a condo or an HOA, what's that going to be? What happens when you get a special assessment? Like, all of those things are factors that go into, is this A, number one, something you can afford? B, number two, is it something you want to afford? And that's a different conversation. Like, I want to look out for my clients, and then maybe I'll sell them a property. I am way less concerned about selling the property first and then making the clients happy. You know, I want the clients to come back. I want them to go out and be raving brand advocates and go, you need to call this guy. And you do that by being straightforward up front and saying, look, here, informed consent, here's what you got. And yeah, some of them are going to be skin of their teeth, and that's okay. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that, as long as you go in informed. But
and the biggest
generally
thing too for us that we recognize is our systems that we do on every loan, right? It's not necessarily technology systems, right? It's just having a standard operating procedure for the first call where we talk about that stuff. It's just having, you know, you can go to, and at 90 to 95% of loan officers, they might have this call or have a conversation with 1 out of 5 or 2 out of 5. They don't have that system that puts it into place of, this is what I talk about, ABCD, with every single buyer, no matter what their credit score is, no matter how much money they have, no matter what they're comfortable with, no matter what price point they're shopping in. Some of that stuff matters, right? I mean, you get into some of those, that $2.7 million house that I was talking about, you know what the insurance policy was on that thing? $56,000 a year. And then the flood policy was written as $32,000 before subsidies. So that house alone would have been $88,000 worth of insurance that a normal person goes, you know, because if I'm being straightforward, to afford a $2.7 million house or to qualify for a $2.7 million house, you probably have to make, you know, a million, which is actually way more common than we recognize, especially in our area, right? Like, there's a lot of money floating around in this area. And those people just go, yep, I want the next best thing. I want that one because it fits and I qualify. And they don't recognize, like, you know, that insurance policy, if you get a 10% increase, that's another $3,200 that gets added. If you get a 20%, it's another $6,500 that you're not recognizing every single year. That's $500 a month every year that you don't even recognize. And so that's the biggest thing, is just having that every single time.
Exactly. And you're right. Like, that 10% increase doesn't sound like all that much if, you know, you're only paying $100. It's 110. That, I don't like that. But when you're talking 32 grand, that is a huge swing, especially compounded over time. And my wife manages condos and HOAs. I used to, but she had an association, I think it was a year and a half, 2 years ago there. And we're talking for the entire community, but their insurance policy went from $250,000 per year. And then on the next cycle, they jumped the rate up to 750. So it was a $500,000 swing. And everybody was like, what are we going to do? And every insurance company out there is like, nothing you can do. That's what it is now. Can you absorb that? And, you know, on smaller properties, okay, look, if I have to go drive Uber Eats, you know, one weekend a month to be able to afford that difference, okay. But when you're talking, you know, hey, your insurance could quite literally double, are you going to be okay absorbing another $30,000 a year to pay for that difference in insurance? And in some cases, yeah, it's not a big deal. In other cases, well, no, I don't want to have to worry about that. All right, well, maybe we readjust what your expectations are here, because those things are tremendous. Same thing with the taxes. Like, it, you're not going to get a break on your taxes. It just, they're going to keep going. So...
and that's, you know, the adjustment piece as well, that, you know, we always see it. We see it a lot with new construction, where they go in and they're paying the lot taxes, and that's the way the originator writes it and doesn't tell them why. And then they adjust 8 months later and they've got this $14,000 tax bill because they bought a $500,000 house, and that's what the taxes are in the area. You know, you see it all over the place, and it's
one of my pet peeves. Yeah, it's one of my pet peeves with the MLS, and I have to explain this because all of the other online reporting places, you know, your Zillow's, Homes.com, all of that, they pull their numbers from the MLS, and the MLS taxes are listed as the previous tax year's taxes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it doesn't take into account that Mrs. Smith bought that house in 1980 for $7,000. And that's what, you know, her tax bill has been capped at 3% since then for increasing. So, you know, yeah, her tax bill right now is like, you know, $12,000 a year, or, you know, whatever. It looks puny by comparison. It's like, no, that's going to readjust now that you're at a $750,000 purchase price based on today. This is what your taxes are going to be. And it's this huge jump on a lot of these properties. But the MLS still reports it as this is what it was before, rather than the county's current one. So it's part of my process is, hey, look, when you're shopping, Pinellas County is easy. I've got to go find the one for Pasco. But you can plug in the address.
It's the exact same functionality. It's the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, even with neighborhoods, that's a problem, too, because cities will have higher taxes than unincorporated county areas. And that educational process is so difficult. You know, like, yeah, I know you want to be in Safety Harbor, but there, if you're just around the corner over here, you'll pay. Yeah. Three houses over, you're going to save quite a bit every year. Okay. You know,
we talk about the adjustment on the taxes. My neighbor's house, she's owned it for 70 years now. They bought it when they got married at 20 years old, and she's owned it owned it since then. Her taxes are like $260 a year. And, you know, that house now probably could sell for 350, maybe 400 on a good day. And, you know, obviously that's not going to be the tax bill after whoever buys it. Even with portability, I don't think they're going to keep it that low. Unless she buys it herself, but, you know, that's the way it works. And it, you know, it's difficult because going off the estimates kind of sucks, because they're like, well, I don't want to pay that much if it's not going to be that much. The good news is you will get a refund at the end of the year if you pay too much into your escrow account, because the lender can't legally keep it. The other way that we kind of fight against that a little bit is we have the ability to waive escrows. And I wouldn't recommend this for every single person that's buying a house, because a lot of times you can get yourself in trouble. But if you have the ability to manage money and save money for those specific expenses, you know, we could waive escrows all the way up to 3% down. And I'm doing it on a VA loan right now. So we can waive escrows on a VA loan, which most lenders won't allow. We've got a couple that will do it. And so the ability for that person who's smart with their money to not have to put all this money into an escrow account, then whatever the bill is, that's what you pay, right? So you're not going to have this, like, because what happens really is the lender that you're working with on your escrow, you're not only paying what you were before, you're paying what it should be plus what they had to overpay from last year. So you're basically, you're, instead of going up $250, which is what it should go up, it's going up $500 a month because you have to pay for what you missed last year plus to restock it for the next year to pay it. And so I would bet that a couple of years ago, looking back, the majority of people came to me going, I have an escrow balance that I can't physically make the payment right now. I need to refinance so that we can reset this. And, you know, obviously we were lucky enough to have that kind of stability in rates for 4 years straight, where if you bought the house and you refinance, you could get right around or better. And, you know, that was a lot of people because they had this $500 to $700 difference in their monthly payment and they can't pay it. Like physically they couldn't make the payment, and you know, they're not calling a lender because the lender's going, well, that's what we need.
Yeah. It is what it is. Suck it up.
That's what it has to be.
Yeah.
And so that's a difficulty that a lot of people recognize.
And I see that happen not too often, but you know, obviously the biggest one was 2008, where it was, you know, everybody told me it was good and then it wasn't. And then nobody was actually willing to help anybody with anything. You know, okay, cool, here's the keys, take it back. And, you know, these scenarios happen a lot more than people think they do. So, you know, it's crazy, though. Like, the more you're into the industry and the more you see these things, it's almost shocking the stuff people have to do to get in and out of different scenarios. You're like, I thought this was pretty straightforward, right? Like, I need $100. You've got $100. Let's go buy this house. You could tie the $100 to the house. Not quite that easy all the time.
Yeah. And not easy all the time. But access to equity at this point is probably at its easiest point that it's ever been in the, I guess, post 2008 or post reform. I can't say it. I wasn't in the game at that point, but I've heard some stories, right? I've seen a movie or two about it.
Big Short. Yeah.
I just watched that scene the other day with the loan originators in the bar talking about.
Yes.
Focus on it. I
love that.
You know, that's why people hate me. The access now, you know, we've got home equity lines of credit that we can fund it could close or be clear to close within 24 to 48 hours. So nice. Like if you need like quick access, there's also, you know, a ton of people out there, and you have to be very careful with how you're utilizing these things, but there's companies out there that will buy into your equity. The flip side of that becomes they get a portion of the winnings when you sell it,
right.
When the property goes up, or if it goes down, they can call the loan due because you're underwater kind of thing. The same thing can happen with a HELOC, but you know, it's a little bit less likely that happens with a HELOC. But the ability to access your equity is just there, right? It's there. So if it's something that, you know, you've got a car that flooded or that you're waiting on the insurance payment to come in, like you can use this line of credit that, you know, is a lesser rate than a credit card. Go buy the new car. When the insurance policy comes in, you pay it off, right? And that's just a way to do it. And you know, utilizing the home equity line or the loan to create more equity, right? Like doing home improvements, that kind of stuff. Like all of these things are so super available now, and there's just so many programs out there. And yeah, that one that funds in a couple of days just blows my mind. Like it's I fill out a form for it. It goes to, you know, we choose a loan style, and then it goes over to the person that's wanting to get access to their equity, and they drive the process. So, you know, they'll ask for documents to prove your income and to prove your assets or whatever it is. You can choose to pay off debt or not pay off debt, or if you need to qualify for it, that can work. But it's all AI driven and computer generated, and it's able to fund within, you know, most of the time we're seeing 5 to 7 days where that gets funded. So it's emergency situations are no longer like I have to wait for my money.
Which that's always been a huge thing too, because the refi process took forever back in the day, and now it's good to see that things are streamlined. Excuse me, you know, they're actually using computers for good. You know, hey, all of the rest of the conditions are there. We just need to verify and you're good. That's wonderful. And again, these are lifelines for people who life has happened to them. We know one person that my wife works with, when Milton came through, he lost both his home and his vehicle. And it's like, one day, done. Dude, what are your options at that point? You know, and fortunately they got him into a good scenario and everything, but you know, if you just lost a vehicle or you had some damage to your house, having that ability to float and quickly be able to do something, that is tremendous. And I don't think, I'm going to air quotes this, traditional lenders, like if I went over to my local bank and I said, hey, look, my car flooded, what can you help me with? They're not going to give me anything, you know, they're like, even the time of day, really. But you know, to be able to call somebody like you and say, dude, what can I do? Is there any way I can access the equity in my house and do something to at least get me by? You've got solutions and they're quick.
I think people are still afraid to utilize it. And I think that that's a stigma, like you said, about the 20% down. It's just that stigma that sticks around, right? I have a personal experience with this. My wife, in 21, bent over to tie her shoe and her disc basically herniated at that point. And so she's been dealing with back issues since, but there was a time frame there where, you know, she was in pet sitting and dog walking. Can't really do that with a herniated disc that you can't move. So basically, at that point, we had lost her entire income over the time frame, and so we took out a HELOC and utilized the money that our house had made for us to help us live the same lifestyle that we were living. You know, good or bad, whatever. We were using that money that our house made for us, so that we don't have to worry about paying the bills or worry about like keeping things going. And that's been something that, you know, it, looking back, that was one of the biggest growth moments for us, was like recognizing, like, you know, we bought our house at X and now it's worth Y and Z. Let's utilize some of it for living the lifestyle that we want to live in the meantime, and we'll pay it off. Like, it'll be paid off when it needs to be paid off. Like,
that's awesome.
You know, we're young enough that it is what it is. It's just part of the plan at this point, right? Like, we didn't stop any of our investments because I was like, I know we're making more on those investments right now than we would, you know, keeping or paying off the home equity line, right? Instead of shifting to the debt. So like we talked about at the beginning, it can be good. So
yeah.
Some of those things can just take care of you, right? Like letting your house take care of you after you've taken care of it, right? Like you've kept up, you did the upkeep, you put on the new roof, you put in the new AC, and it's worth twice as much as what you bought it for. Like, why are you letting that generational wealth just sit there? Because you can use it to create more generational wealth. You know, there was a statistic a couple of years ago that I saw that was just mind blowing to me, but also at the same time, completely expected. 86% of people's retirement wealth is locked in their home equity.
Yeah.
86%. Like, if we could get some kind of education out there about how you access the equity to use it for other things, right? Like, I advise all the time, like, people are like, oh, I want to put $100,000 down on a, you know, a $300,000 house. Like, okay, what else can we use that money for? Like, let's cut it back to 50. Now you've either got a safety net of 50 and you're still comfortable with the payment, or you take that 50 and you buy an investment property, and now you've got something that pays for the investment property itself plus a little bit of your home loan, and now you're at the same payment plus two houses gaining equity.
Yeah.
There's just so many different strategies to utilize. And, you know, I always joke about kind of doing a cash out refinance when you're buying your next house, without having to do the refinance, because you can just, like, if you've got a car that's a $40,000 loan, put down $40,000 less on your home, because that's only going to change your payment, you know, $150, a couple hundred dollars, and you're paying off that $600 or $700 car payment. Yeah. So now you've freed up $500 moving to a new house. Like, it can change. Think about what $500 extra would do. Like, blow $100 and still got $400 extra. Like, right. You get to, you know, go out to eat at a fancy steakhouse a couple nights a month if you really want to blow it that way. But you know, there's been so many different ways that we, you know, the creativity piece, and that's why it's in the name, is that's what we focus on, is just being as creative as possible to help people do things that they wouldn't normally do.
Let's dive back into your podcast stuff, man. You've got two different ones. Which one do you want to jump into? Well, first let's talk about, like, why do you have two podcasts, and then pick whichever one you want to run with and tell me all about it, and we'll move on to the next one after that.
Yeah, they both have kind of been put on hold for a while, but getting back into them more recently, and it's just been, you know, obviously having a baby and kind of not wanting to focus as much time there. It's, you know, as you know, it's not something that doesn't take a lot of time to do. So, it's something
and the babies
that I
don't
really
wait.
What's that?
The babies don't wait, man. Like, no. I'm hungry now. You're going to deal with this. I don't care what else is going on.
For sure. Yeah. And he's starting to move around a lot. And so, yeah, lots going on there. But with the podcast, I've got two. One of them, I created mainly for the real estate industry, to be able to kind of explore the passion of the real estate agent or the loan officer. And I focused more on that aspect of it because nobody focuses on that aspect of it. As real estate professionals, we often get caught up kind of like, you know, what we just did there, Zach. We went back and forth and we were just talking about how, like, different things work and telling the war stories and, you know, talking about, sometimes we get stuck in this sales mentality of, like, selling the house or selling the loan, and we have to just talk about numbers and all of that stuff. And, you know, you and I even talked about it beforehand, like, getting stuck in the numbers can just bury people because there's a very small subset of the population that can even follow the conversation.
It's terrible, dude. Like, those are the hardest conversations to have, because they're so specific, and you know you miss a decimal place and it changes everything. Like, why? And they are, I mean, you're talking about something you're talking about people's money. And I think a lot of the time we lose track of that, you know, if somebody was in my bank account and making judgments about that, I would just be like, oh my Lord, you know, I don't like that. That's very uncomfortable. Or, you know, what your future obligations might be. That's very uncomfortable. And I think it's important that we approach that with the mentality of, I understand this can feel invasive. My job is to help you, not to make it worse. So, you know, please let me make things better for you. But they're not easy conversations to have at all. So
no, and the podcast piece is really to help. It's really focused on showing the professional that I'm interviewing in a different light. So instead of getting stuck into that stuff of talking about the things that we normally talk about, it's flipping the switch and kind of creating a person. Right? Like, it's allowing that person to come through and really talk about what they're passionate about and why they're a real estate agent, because nobody really talks about that. And that, I think, it's a problem. Like, it's truly a problem because we're dealing with people.
Yeah. And they always assume that we're coming after it with commission breath. I'm just looking to get paid. I don't care. I'm going to shove you in whatever box I can to make sure I get a paycheck. That's not where a lot of us are coming from. I mean,
lot of people don't focus that. And you know, I know for sure you and there are a ton of people that I interact with, and even people that I've brought onto the podcast, been some of my best episodes. Those people started out down the path, even during the episode, would start down the path of, well, I did this many sales. I'm like, I don't care about any of that stuff. I want to know who you are because I want to connect with you. And then once we bring that in, it really, like, you know, like we talked about creating the long form into the short form, some of those little snippets, you can tell when somebody flips the switch and they're really, really passionate about what they're talking about, because it's just a different feeling, right? You can watch them get goosebumps as they talk about it, and you can watch them kind of like sit up in their chair, and it's just a completely different feel and environment. And, you know, while, you know, I'm not getting hundreds of thousands of views or anything like that based off of it, it's really a value for me to have more content, for them to have more content, and for them to show it, like I said, in a different light. So that I really approach that from the heart aspect of it. One of the other options for the name of the mortgage company was Heart First Lending. And so that, you know, that's kind of really where I'm coming from, is I want to feel
podcast
connected to people, right?
Yeah, the name of the podcast is Heart. Yeah. And the podcast is Heart First Accelerator, right?
That one was called Reconnect. We're kind of rebranding it at Creative First as like the Creative First podcast, where my partner will do it with his partners and we'll bring on a bunch of other people. So that one's kind of in transition into a rebrand there. The One Man's Journey is the other podcast I have along the similar line of creating space for people to really talk about what they're passionate about or tell their story. This one's mainly, I would say mainly, is only for men. You know, I created it 2 years ago when I was kind of, it was after a couple of years of being sober. So I'll be 4 years sober on Easter. So tomorrow.
Congratulations, and man. That's huge.
Yeah. So once I kind of got through the first year of trying to redefine who I was and like figure it out, right? Like, you know, you go from all of those stages of drinking where I went from like, ooh, this is really fun in college because I was able to kind of fit in drinking. And then you leave college and it didn't end, right? Like, I'm like, I'm still having fun, but it's creating trouble in my life. And I'm not really recognizing that, you know, I just keep doing the same thing over and over again. And then I recognize like, it's only creating trouble. Like, I'm not even having fun with it because the next two or three days suck afterwards.
Yeah, and you're borrowing, you know, once time.
You get off that hamster wheel, you can kind of look at it, you know, from that 300-foot view, and it's truly life-changing for myself, and I know it's life-changing for my family and for my financial situation and for what we've done. Like, none of that stuff would exist as it is without being sober. So creating a space for people, it was kind of a vision to create space for people that had gone through addiction issues. It's kind of transformed into really just like any men at all. I want, because we've all gone through struggles and we don't get to talk about it.
No, we don't.
We don't. It's a stigma in the world that we don't get to explore our feelings. We don't get to talk about emotions. And if we do, we're either considered weak or, you know, our wives are going to look at us differently. And we can still, you know, I'm creating a space with the podcast where we can do that, you know, without showing weakness. It's going to show more strength because the vulnerability is there. And, you know, so a lot of the content I'm creating now is really like, it's not about business, it's about people. Yeah. And every single person, right? This is, I don't know how else to say this, but every single person in an industry is still a person. Like, we look at it as a number or a sales piece or like, oh, this guy's a top producer, or, you know, he's number one at his company, but he still has feelings. He still has thoughts. He still has doubts. He still has all of that stuff. And being able to give space for men to talk about that for me was something that at that point, you know, when I created it, was extremely like important and extremely forward thinking for me to be able to just open that up and allow that. So creating that environment.
And that's part of the reason that I wanted to do this, because, yeah, we can talk some business. I want people to know what your business is. It's one of the terms that I learned and I've learned that I despise. I don't like people who come on and pitch slap, you know, oh, hey, my business is the best, blah, blah, blah. Tell me what, like, what's your human journey look like? You know, how did you get into this stuff? And I think we've covered that pretty decently so far, but, you know, the human story is what people connect with. And I love, I think I saw it on one of your posts, that your mentality, how you approach everything is through radical authenticity. And I just love that, dude. Like, I'm here being me. Tell me about that. You know, and that I think more people need to be to get more comfortable connecting with people on the best way I've heard it put is as affinity points of, I recognize you've had this struggle, I've had that struggle too, or hey, we're both into motorcycles, or, you know, there's some point there that we can connect with each other, not just as service providers, but as human beings. And that's part of the reason I wanted to do this, lift everybody up. And then let people connect with the people that they say, hey, I totally get that. That's the type of person I want to work with. Obviously with me, I've got a pretty banging sense of humor on most things. I'm never going to be the guy who shows up in a blazer and goes, yes, how do you think about it? No, man,
I tried being that guy too. Like, you could look back at my old pictures. I was in a suit coat and that stuff. And, you know, I enjoy it because you get like the extra boost of confidence, right? Like, you're wearing a suit. It's great. But it's just, that's not me. For a while there, I was wearing like nothing but Hawaiian style shirts, like button up, like they had freaking pineapples and flamingos all over it. Like I've transitioned into that piece of just being unapologetically myself, and just being able to recognize that, like, living that way attracts the people to you that you want to work with.
Your vibe attracts your tribe.
I rarely now get introductions or referrals from, you know, and I joke about this all the time, but like the 30-year real estate agent that leads the conversation with, I've been a real estate agent for 30 years and I've never seen this. I rarely work with that person anymore. So, you know, like it's
own relief, isn't it?
When it's not happening and in the moment, like now I can look at it and go, really, like, okay, we're never working together again. But, you know, it's just, I'm rarely working with those people that I don't want to work with anymore. And it's because I'm a magnet to what I want to have around me. And I'm the polarity, the reverse polarity of that magnet to the people I don't want around me. And it's taken a lot of time to go from, you know, like I told you a little bit ago, when I was in high school, I felt like I wasn't accepted. I felt like I could never be involved. I felt like I never was included in the popular crowd or whatever, right? Like I was good at baseball and I felt like I was exiled because of it. I got to college, drinking allowed me to fit in. And then yeah. I've gone through that whole thing and I've recognized like fitting in isn't always the best way. And most of the time it's not. So like just like transitioning into that truthful being of who you are. And you know, podcasting allows me to really explore that. Like it's super fun to get on camera and just that you need the person you bring on says something that's interesting and you two can riff back and forth. Like we've done it for an hour and a half now, like riffing back and forth on stuff that interests both of us. And it's because we're like, oh yeah, me too. Oh yeah, me too. Oh yeah. I remember that. Like that's why I love it. And then I call it kind of therapy after a while. Like I've literally cut back on actually going to my therapist because I have the podcast available to me because it's just, it kind of completes the soul aspect for me. So
It does. It's having that human connection and exploring that in like the best way possible. And business is just kind of secondary in my mind. If we are presenting our authentic selves and having a good time doing it, and people watch this later and go, dude, I totally get it. These guys are like, they're right up my alley. They're exactly who I need to work with. Those are the phone calls I want to get, where people are picking up the phone and saying, please, can I hire you? That is an entirely different scenario than the 30-year agent who's out there cold calling people all day, every day. I guarantee at the end of the deal, the people who sought us out, who watched this episode, they're going to be the ones who are like, it was the best experience of my life, man. You know, these guys are, what you see is what you get. We had a blast. I want that. And if that means I sell two less houses per year, I'll take that. That doesn't, I'm totally good with that. And I love
I've seen
that.
The other side. I called leads for a living to start my industry or to start my career. So I mean, making, 80 to 100 calls a day, it's hard to make a connection when you hang up and then you're on to the next one. So I went through that phase. I also went through the phase of like seeing the cutthroat of the industry where, I went on vacation. I came back to an action plan of like, I hadn't been closing enough loans, but I was still making the calls and it just wasn't converting at that point. I came back and I was like, okay, fine. I'll do it myself. And at that point in 2017, I went fully like self-generated and did everything social media. The tough part with everything social media is you sit behind a computer all day. And so creating that connection was very difficult. And so that's what I was really doing a couple years ago. Is like, how can I do this? You know, we always talk about in the industry, the biggest thing for loan officers is to call people and set up coffee appointments or lunch appointments. To me, I still have to have this balance between efficiency and productivity. And doing this, where like in a good scenario, obviously not where we went through the three fails to get here, but in a good scenario, like we set up a time frame.
That's still an awesome story.
I turn on my computer, you turn on yours, and we're right there. I don't have to drive 30 minutes to a coffee shop and 30 minutes home. Like you live, you're in the St. Pete area, but some people that I want to meet with live in Tampa. I have to go across that damn bridge. Like I'm not doing that. Like let's do this. Let's set up a Zoom. We'll record something. It provides longer term value for both of us. We can still get to know each other in the same way and probably better because it's structured. Where we go to a coffee meeting, we're like, how's business? How, like, come on. Like, it's all this, the superficial stuff. I can do this. Like, I'm wearing pants, but I could do it without wearing pants if I wanted to, right? Like
that's challenge accepted. Challenge accepted. Next time, no pants.
It's a fantastic dynamic, and it's just it's more efficient. It accomplishes the same thing, and it accomplishes actually more than what it would, you know, doing the coffee appointments.
So, have you read the book The Seven Levels of Communication? Okay, so you know in there where they talk about having the coffee, you know, the having a restaurant and having people come through and meet you. I think those face-to-face one-on-ones are good and they are useful.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But you also have to be strategic. Like part of the reason, and I know you can't see my setup, but obviously I didn't cheap out on this stuff. excuse me. Part of the reason that I wanted to be able to create like this is because I know if I just do YouTube videos and I can intersperse cuts from different people or, you know, create my own content that way, YouTube it's second only to Google as a search engine. It's owned by Google. And if somebody goes, hey, you know what? I want to know more about like how do I refinance my house? And that where we come up in the results and somebody goes, man, that's really amazing. It doesn't matter if we're working, doesn't matter if we're playing with the kids, I'm out walking the dog. They can watch that at 3 a.m. Doesn't matter. There can be 10,000 people watching that, which means my conversation load goes from, you know, huge about, hey, have you thought about refinancing your house? To you already know the information, you're calling me to book that appointment. And I loved that mindset shift that I can provide the value ahead of time and have people already know my personality and decide, yes, I'm the one they want to work with. And it works if I'm awake or not. And I see a lot of, I call them the dinosaurs of the industry, that are still picking up the phone and cold calling. Look, I get it. It's a numbers game. And I get that it is still a valid strategy in some regard. But I also liken it to, you know, if you went to the bar and you wanted to pick up on women and you just started off with a very offensive line that I'm going to soften up right now and say, hey, you want to go home with me? If you just go around the bar out of 100 women, maybe one will take you up on it. There's no quality control in that process. There, you're going to wind up getting whatever you get, if you get anything. That is a hard grind rather than just showing up and going, yeah, I'm a cool dude. Who wants to work with me? That's a whole different scenario.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that, speaking obviously from a loan officer perspective and somebody that's done this in the past myself, the one thing that we fall into the trap of is like, this is only it, right?
Yes.
And we fall into that like and or like only I'm a cold mailers. Caller. Okay, great. I'm a YouTube guy. Okay, great. Like
Do they both work? Yes.
Right. But the difficulty becomes, you know, and we've talked about this a few times over the last few days, being the one man show, you can fall into it and go, like, I want to do this and this, but I don't have the time to do this, so I'm gonna drop this out. And you know, we chase the next thing that becomes super successful really quickly. Like we'll go get a deal on the first two things that we do. Like the first two videos we make, people have conversations. I'm hearing it literally from people that are very close to me right now. He like get a call and goes, oh man, I put out a video, got 1,000 views and I got 2 leads out of it. Great. That will not happen every time. So if you can continue to operate as if that is never going to happen again, that's the best way to do it. But you know, offloading some of that stuff. And this is something that I'm preaching to myself. Is the delegation.
We need our own pep talks, right? Yeah. Like,
I say this, it's funny too. Like a lot of people comment on my content and like, I bet like, you know, the large majority of my content is me just looking in the mirror, like not physically looking in the mirror, but like I'm literally talking to myself. Because I think the best way for you and for us as professionals is to look back as who we were and help that person get to where we are.
Yeah,
like if you can do that in everything you do, you will your success levels go through the roof. And being able, you know, that's part of the one man's journey vision as well, is like, if this connects with you, follow my path because it worked. It may not work for you. You may get 3 steps down the line and go, I don't want to do that anymore. But it's worked for me. And that's all I can tell you.
I love that because, you know, be the person that you needed 5-10 years ago. That mentality, it's so empowering for where you are today, because we always look at what's in front of us and go, oh, that's a huge mountain to climb. But we don't look back and go, man, I made it up from that valley. And, you know, it shifts your mindset, especially when you're coming from that place of service, into, wow, I really do have a ton of stuff to talk about. And, you know, these are very helpful points. And, you know, I haven't told this story very often, but I came this close to losing my first house, and I wound up just kind of getting smacked with the concept of equity. And I was like, wait a minute. Why didn't somebody tell me about this before now? Okay, that's what started me off, because I came that close to losing my house. I was like, wait a minute, somebody's wanting to pay me more than twice what I paid for this house? Okay, I'll take that. How did that work? Here I am now, because I want people to understand the power of equity, the power of financing your deal, all of these different techniques. One of my favorites is small multis. Please go buy a fourplex, live in one unit, have the other three finance your, and then move on. All of these tools that I wish I had known about, because I'm telling you right now, my life would have turned out a lot differently had I known those things. So let me set you up for success and bring me along on that ride.
Yeah, and you mentioned talking about there's a lot of people that make a lot of money and a lot of wealth and a lot of success and have a lot of success, you know, helping that person that they were 5 to 10 years ago.
Yes.
To me, longer term, for my vision of success long term, is closing that gap versus, you know, like I can help that person and then I make the content for that, right? Like I've got a plan of like, I'm going to make the content for that first time home buyer. I've kind of progressed into like, I've made that content. It's still evergreen. It will play forever. Now I want to talk to the investor that I was 2 years ago, or 4 years ago. Now, when we bought those two houses, I want to talk to that guy. So now I'm closing the gap of where I was to where I am. And once, like, to me, the vision, and this may be a realization I just had, cause I got goosebumps as I'm thinking about it and it's coming out of my mouth. But the vision for me is the more, I will have more success if I can close that gap and really talk to the person that I was instead of 5 or 10 years ago, maybe, you know, 2 years ago, maybe 1 year ago, maybe 5 or 10 minutes ago. And some of my content, I've recognized some of my better content is that person that had that realization 5 minutes ago. You mentioned me in the car. I put out a video that I literally talked about, how do you create so much content? It's because everything's content. I'm listening to the radio and I like the song. I create a video about the message that I got from the song. So I'm talking to that guy I was 5 minutes ago.
Exactly.
And it's just creating, you're talking to a person and that person can be yourself. And that's, I think that's such a huge hurdle for people in our position of like, oh, I don't know what to talk about. Then you can't be very good at your job if you don't know what to talk about. Because if you honestly say, and there's so many agents and there's so many lenders, I am the best person for you to work with, if you can say that out loud and you are afraid of making content because you don't know what to talk about, you are not the best person for that person. It's flat out, because you do not have the knowledge you think you have. And if you do have it, then be confident in it and put it on camera or put it in writing or do something. I wrote a book about first time buying. Do that.
Like, yes.
I was afraid of getting on camera at that point. I just wrote the book instead. I sat at a coffee shop for 2 weeks straight and wrote for 3 hours a day and put an A to Z book together, self-published it, figured it out, because I knew that I had to get the information out there, but I didn't know how to do it. That was my goal, was get the information out.
And wasn't it Einstein? Stuff. Wasn't it Einstein that said, if you can't explain it to a child, you don't know your information well enough?
Yeah, and if you can't, if you're on Reddit at all, explain it like I'm five is a real thing.
Yes. Yes.
Like there's people on X right now asking Grok to explain it to them like they're five. Like
exactly.
And it works, right?
Which is
like
solid.
Grok responds. You know, it's something that's serious, because that's, and you know, if we look back over history, I talk about Barack Obama won the presidency because he was able to take his information and take it down to a sixth grade level, which is what 80% of the people listen. Like that's what they hear speeches at as a sixth grade level. And if you go back and you look at any of the great speakers over time, Zig Ziglar's probably one of the best ones, right? He uses funny words and crazy language and like things that go in full circle, because that's what kids, middle schoolers, understand.
Yeah. Like, and it's something you can connect with easily. and it sticks with you. And I love exploring that topic, because I mean, we could do that all day too. But I think it's really important to have been exposed to all of those things and then be able to distill them down and to a certain extent apply it to our industry, but also to be able to internalize that and come from that place when we're talking to people, whether or not it's about business. Because I mean, I've got quotes for days, and you know, I think you know, hey, I've been here before. I dealt with that too. I think those are the type of scenarios that most people are too busy trying to look good, and they're uncomfortable not looking good.
Well, it's people that are stuck in the old age before TikTok, yes, really, because TikTok changed it, right? Like, it's the old age, the original Facebook, the original MySpace. I've got to like put filters on and have the right lighting and this like super, like the original YouTube, right? Like if you go back and you look at some of those older YouTube videos that were super high edited and super extreme, that's what everybody wanted to watch. And then people, you know, and I remember Gary Vee specifically calling it out like 2019, 2020. He's like, this is going to be the push because everybody has a camera now. So I can just pick up my phone and record. And there's so many people that are so stuck. Like, I don't look like that. You don't have to.
You don't. Yeah, like, exactly.
CapCut is free and you can literally record your face. Just make sure you're in the middle of the screen. Add the captions below your face so they're not over your face and post it. Like, it's not like the barriers that you talked about before, right? The barriers to entry, are they're gone. Like, it's not and now it's just technology.
It's purely a psychological barrier. And I think, again, I still see a lot of people that are caught up trying to look good. And yet they're missing out on the opportunity to actually connect with people. And I loved how, I can't remember where I heard this, but they said people are like Velcro. They connect on the fuzzy, sticky bits. You have
the stuff, the hairy stuff.
The hairy stuff. You have to put your sticky bits out there where you're like, man, that's kind of uncomfortable. I don't know if I want to talk about that. That's what people will stick to.
Yeah, if you have second guessed it saying it, pause the video, write it down so that you can organize it. Because that's, I think a lot of times that's where I get lost too. Is like I ramble and then I'm like here and there. Right, like that's just the way it works. But being able to organize thoughts, take a little extra time. Like have a thought. Honestly, man, I've got a to do list of, I say 250, it's probably 350 video ideas that I haven't been able to do because I know that like I'm going to have to edit it at the end, right? But now I've, you know, like I told you earlier where we got this massive content push, now I can literally turn those 250 things into an interview of myself and I put it in a system and it gets edited and blasted out for me. So the delegation piece is huge. There's companies out there. There's one company that I've used. They just came out with like a $450 a month of like you get 25 to 30 reels every month. So you could literally record 30 topics. They'll edit all of them for you and you can just keep pushing them in. And now you've got all of that stuff for $450. Like yeah, that's insane
what,
to me.
You know what we need to do? We need to do a video editing company for those of us who do have, you know, ADHD or autism or whatever, because I'm telling you, I don't have ducks that are in a row. I got squirrels that are at a rave. And when I get in front of a camera, it's just all over the place all the time. And you're right, having that train of thought is so difficult sometimes. But the flip side of that is it makes the content interesting. And
it's a freaking superpower, man. It is. Superpower.
And I really don't want to do the teleprompter thing where I'm just reading a script because that's boring.
I've gone to the most successful way that I've gotten it down to is one that like ask answer. So literally just put one question in front of you and just answer the question as if a client would ask you that question.
Or yes.
If you can't, like, if you don't have that set up, what you do is you want to make a topic. Like I just put out a couple weeks ago, the 5 things underwriters hate. I wrote the script in 10 minutes, like literally like nice. I just bullet point everything, right? It's information I talk about on a daily basis. Just like take 10 minutes, organize it into bullet points. And then you just elaborate as if you were talking to a buyer sitting on the other side or a seller sitting on the other side. It's information you already have. And, you know, going back, if you're the best person for the job, prove it, man. Like, you have all the tools.
Exactly.
Prove it. Like, exactly. It's, you can do it. I promise you.
Show me the money.
It's all true. There. So, you know, that's true. As a professional, you know, going back to being the person, the information's great. I don't necessarily like reels for deals kind of things like that. It has its place because you have to prove that you do know the information. But going more towards that human content, the one video that every single person listening to this podcast can make, and I don't care if you're a mechanic, I don't care if you're a real estate agent, I don't care if you're a lender, I don't care what you do. Every single person should make an origin story video and sit down for 20 minutes and write out your story. And if I'm being truthful, the fun with trouble, I saw a 1 minute reel this morning. And that idea was like that. I'm running with that for the next forever because it's perfect. Like, it's exactly, like, it is. I couldn't put it into words, but I watched a reel and it told me that, like, that was it. Great. I put that in. Right.
And we needed that. So,
And I had an interview for another podcast right before I got on with you. It was the same thing that I was like, this is great. I'm going to run with this because he wants inspirational stories. I'm like, here's my story. So you can change it too. Like, the origin story can change too. So you don't have to sit there and go, you know, in fifth grade, I did this, just put some bullet points together, tell people where you came from and why you do what you do. And you're already ahead of half the population of real estate agents.
Yeah.
And that house didn't close a deal last year. I can promise you that.
Yeah. And I'm telling you right now, everybody has gotten sick of, as I like to call it, the slick marketing. I'm a top producer. That's nice. Are you okay to work with? They care less about
some value to some of the celebrity, right? But even, like, you know, in the real estate industry, we have Ryan Serhant, right? Like, the guy did celebrity videos forever, that super high edited stuff of just following him around doing different things in these multi-million dollar properties. What is he doing now? He's breaking it down and he's telling individual stories about clients that people want to listen to and engage with, and then they want to work with him because he's telling the story. The story of a brand is the top
everything.
Of the line.
Well, and you've read the book.
You'll change your business if you start telling stories.
You have totally read that book too, haven't you? A Story Brand?
Yep. And there's actually a second one that just came out, and I just saw it on Amazon. It's in my Amazon cart.
Story Brand 2.0. I'll have to go get that too.
We brought up books earlier, and I didn't get around to saying it, but in 2019, I read 120.
Wow.
And in 2020, I read 150, and I'll never do it again. And I just had this conversation on social media earlier, unpopular opinion, just because you read a bunch of books doesn't mean you're going to be really good at what you do. It's actually taking what's in those books and acting on it. And I've learned, like I said, from reading almost 300 books in 2 years, I would 100% recommend find a book that you like. And if you get two chapters into it and you're forcing yourself to read it, put it down. If you're not ready for it, find a new book. Then take that book that you can get all the way through or that you, like, literally don't want to put down and read it over and over again for 3 months. Read it all the way through without taking notes, then read it through, take notes, then read your notes, go back, read the book, like, and just do that for every quarter. So pick a book a quarter. You will be 10 miles ahead of where I was reading 150 or 120 books a year.
It's okay. Let me hit you up with the hardball question. How do I find a good, in your case, lender, and how can the consumer tell the difference? So if somebody was moving cross country, you don't know anybody, you don't know how to, like, there's no way you can say, call Joe, what qualities should they be looking for? Like, what, how do you find, how can somebody easily define what makes a good lender?
It's very difficult to define what makes a good lender. However, finding the right person to work with. So one, you have to have a connection with the person. You can't just focus on numbers and, oh, you got the best rate, I'm going there. That you'll lose. It may close. It may work out for you. You may save $16 a month. It's generally, you want to find somebody that you can trust after a phone call with them. So they don't sound super salesy. They're not trying to push you into a direction for a certain product because they understand that product better. Number two is giving you options, like we talked about. If this person, you go to this person and say, give me a quote, and they spit out, this is your rate, that's wrong. It's inappropriate as a transaction for a lender to do something like that. And I say that because it's not your rate. What if you want to use one discount point to buy it down? What if you want to use half of a discount point to buy down your rate? What if you want to use a 3-2-1 buy down and you want to pay for it out of your pocket or ask the seller to pay for it? Have you ever even heard of that option? Most people haven't. And it's because most of the lenders that you come across, and it sucks to say, but most of the lenders you come across are just going to give you a scenario and say, this is your rate, this is your fees, and that's what our price is. So being able to connect with the person and then having them give you options, and those options may not come until later on in the process. Generally, what I'll say is like, hey, yeah, your rate is around this right now, which is going to turn into this much of a mortgage payment. So then you got to add your taxes and insurance on it. When you find the house you want to make an offer on, bring it back. We'll talk about specifics and we can choose which direction to go in. So just being able to have those conversations about choice, and it's your loan, your home for 30 years or however long you're going to live in it. You should be able to choose what you want for that time frame.
Dude, that was an awesome answer. Thank you.
I would say it, whether that was a random question asked me or like, you know, like we've talked about, like that's just my answer to that question is somebody that's developed who they are over time. Like somebody that's not confident in what they do won't give you options because they're afraid of you choosing the one that they don't know. And that's the most difficult part about the profession.
Dude, that's its own little clip right there. You know that, right? You just dropped a gold nugget right there. I love it.
If there's one thing that comes with podcast experience, it's recognizing you throw in those little bits and you're going, clip that for me. That one's coming out.
Yeah. Totally, man. Totally. Well, we're going to get out of here. Dude, thank you so much for being a guest today. We'll do this again because this was great. And I think we could probably go for a week and never hit the same topic twice and just have a blast. So
yeah, there's a lot to discuss out there. A lot of inefficiency, a lot of things that we, you know, we've experienced both together, whether together or apart. I think there's an extreme value to being able to talk about that stuff.
I totally agree, man. And it's been a blast. Thank you so much for taking your time today. I know you're super busy, dude, but I appreciate it. Everybody can find you over Kick Butt Mortgage Guy. And I'll post up in the descriptions, any place I post this, I'll have links for your website, all of your websites and your podcast as well. So I'm going to sign off now. And thanks again for joining. Thanks for joining me this evening. I hope you found it entertaining, maybe even informative. If you have questions, please email them to podcast@zachkidd.com, and I'll include the response in the next live stream. Until then, I'm Zach Kidd, Realtor, Clearwater, Florida, signing off.